Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Second Act Podcast. And just before we get into the pod, we would like to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on Treaty 7 land, which is inhabited by a plethora of First Nations peoples, such as the Suni, the Kainai, and the Blackfoot Nations. It's very important to us that we acknowledge this and say how grateful we are for the opportunity to not only live on this land, but to record the podcast on the land as well.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to sit down and talk a little bit about our chat with Deborah Kozowski. I mean, I saw her on LinkedIn chatting back and forth with friend of the pod, Andrea Horvath, and I reached out and said, you know, Andrea, can you put me in touch with Deborah? And what an incredible conversation. I mean, she just wants everybody to know how not easy, but how attainable things are. So it was just a great opportunity to sit down and talk to the woman that's behind the Millionaire Woman Show podcast.
Yeah, it's a great pod. And Deborah talks about stepping into the entrepreneurial industry, and which unfortunately is a mainly male-dominated industry. And her experiences, we've talked to entrepreneurs on the pod before, but we've never really talked to someone with the experiences quite like Deborah. It's a great pod, a real eye-opener, and just an enjoyable listen all around.
Yeah, lots of stuff to learn. She talks about the shoebox project that she's built up to this incredible project, and then turned the reins over to somebody else. We talked about what that was like. And she wore her heart in her sleeve. She was honest with us, gracious with her time. Not really much more we can ask for. So without any further ado, let's kick it over to Deborah Kozowski.
Thank you so much for having me, Gord. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I want to make sure that we, our mutual friend, Andrea, who set us up, is proud of the work that we did. So I asked how to say your name properly and stuff like that. So we'll make sure that Andrea might not regret ever putting me onto you after seeing your guys' work on LinkedIn.
Yeah, she's a fabulous lady. I'm excited to be now connected to you.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun to sit down and talk to people that are doing something maybe a little bit different than what they'd started out doing. And that's kind of the premise of the show. But
yeah,
the fun part is to understand how they got on that path and so that people listening can say, hey, that's not that different to what I'm doing. And that sounds like something I might be interested in. And maybe they can, you know, spend 45 minutes or so listening and get a better understanding at the end. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who Deborah is and what you're all about?
Well, I'm a very multi-passionate person who loves attempting to seize everything out of life. I do everything from hiking to kayaking to marathon running, now walking, swimming, triathlons, tons of things. I love food of all kinds, and just got on the bug of travel as well. So I'm an explorer, I'm an investigator, and most of all, I want to live fully. And I think I've always had that part of me, and I want to share that with others. One of the biggest things for me is my mission in life is about helping others share their gifts so I can share mine, and vice versa. There was a time when I was about 8 years old that there was this messaging. I had lost a family member who I was 8 years old, and my family member was 16. And it crushed me. It was my cousin. And a few months later, it was Christmas time, and I wanted to give a gift. 8 years old, made a gift at Christmas time. I'm going to, you know, change the world with this gift. And I had been hiding in the bathroom waiting for them to come into my grandparents' house. And this family member was grieving, having a really hard time because of that loss. And I would run out as soon as the door would open. I'm like, are they here yet? Are they here yet? And they're like, there's this hand that went on my shoulder and said, Deborah, now's not the time to share your gifts. And I, 8-year-old, precocious, right, runs back to the bathroom, eyeing, because the bathroom's lined with the front door. Door opens again, come running out, and I'm ready to give this gift. And again, that same hand on my shoulder, Deborah, now's not the time to share your gifts. And the third time, I came running out, and I saw it was the person I wanted to give it to, but I was intercepted. And this hand again on my shoulder, Deborah, now is definitely not the right time. And at that time, like, I learned this in my coaching. When I was doing my coach training, I realized I had this signature story that I had subconsciously buried away. And it came to the surface that at that time, that 8-year-old Deborah thought she could change the world, that my own little circle of the world, with a gift. Regrettably, I don't know what that gift was. Now, many, many years later, I know that that gift was me. And I, and that's why I, as I've learned that, that's why I feel so passionate about everything in the world around me and wanting everybody to experience it to the richness that they have around them. And sometimes we get so caught up in the busyness of life, we lose track of that. So that kind of taps into that multi-passionate part, but that's where it stems from.
It's interesting that you were able to kind of, you know, remember that point in your life. It obviously held some significance.
Yeah.
And then obviously you don't, you know, it's not linear point A to point B, but at some point you were able to circle back and understand that that was the gift that 8-year-old Deborah wanted to share. And you were had the wherewithal to find a way to impart that to other people. Like, obviously you didn't go right into coaching and executive coaching and all this other, you know, where you're putting your story out there. Mm-hmm. What was some of the stuff that you did in between that, that just wasn't quite, you know, that left you feeling quite, not quite fulfilled?
You know, it's been a very wild and interesting journey. I have a background in nursing. I have a degree in nursing. And when I was first out of high school, I wanted to be a physician. So I went to university and was struggling. I burnt myself out my second year. I layered on 6 science courses with labs. And I went to see an advisor and they said, well, why aren't you taking swimming or something fun, something light to boost your GPA? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm a farm girl who every dollar I invest, I need to make sure it's going towards something. But little did I know, she was trying to teach me about balance. She was attempting to tell me that you don't have to go hard all the time. So then I was, you know, having a conversation with my parents and they're like, well, you know, nursing's the next best thing. That's the closest thing. So I went into nursing school, you know, and it has served me well. I travel nursed in the States and I came back to Canada and worked for many, many years in nursing. One of the things that I did is I still applied to medicine. You know, I wrote my MCAT while I was in the States. And the day that I was writing my exam, I was sitting there. You know, when you get into that momentum of writing an exam, you're kind of in the zone. And all of a sudden there was this interruption to say that there was an error in the exam. And then they said, whoever had the BS exam on the cover, that your exam has an error in it. And lo and behold, when I turned it over, the letters BS stood before me. And in my head, that was a signal that I wasn't doing the right thing. But I finished the exam. I did fairly well and I applied to medical schools and did not get in. And I was still disappointed because I think, you know, there's times I'll sit back and think, you know, I'd be a really great doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, with travel nursing, I was exploring the world. So it kind of put it out of my mind. And then when I came back to Canada and started my family, nursing was a really great career that worked, you know, with shift work and looking after and raising 3 kids. And it worked really well. And then I was invited by a friend to a dinner, a luncheon. It was entrepreneurs luncheon. And I sat in the audience or sat at the table and I was watching all these people embracing. They were talking about their businesses and just this ignited energy that I had never experienced before. And it wasn't familiar to me being in healthcare that there was this other world. I was always in my world, right? And the speaker was Sandra Yancey from the eWomen Network. And she was talking about The Little Engine That Could. A children's book, a children's story is what ignited it in me, really. And she was talking about how they were moving these toys across the mountain so that these children can get these toys. But it took this train who, you know, didn't have the experience, didn't have this, didn't have that. And all they could do is reaffirm that self-talk of, I think I can, I think I can. And she did. And it was from that moment, I'm like, I got to have a piece of this. Like, how did I not know that this exists in the world? And then I had gone to a few other things. My husband, you know, was going to real estate seminars, and he's like, why don't you come with me one day? So I said, fine. I was sitting in the front row. I had just read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I was watching this gentleman just share his story, sharing, you know, about the excitement of real estate. But I was more excited about watching the audience just be so invested in what he was sharing. And I thought, I would love to do that. So, you know, I'm like, I'm going to go talk to him. So I went up to him and I did the biggest mistake ever. Never do this to someone. You want to, this is my mistake, but greatest learning. So I went up to him and I said, hey, Darren, do you, first of all, I think you're doing a great job. And I would like to be a motivational speaker like you. Can I pick your brain? Famous last words. Can I pick your brain? And he's looked at me. He goes, first of all, I'm not a motivational speaker. And we'll talk about this right after the break. I said, oh, okay. So here I am all satisfied. I go sit down back in the front row. And not even 5 minutes later, he pulls me up in front of 200 people in this hall and asks me what I did wrong. And all of a sudden my face went red. And I remember thinking, oh, I know exactly what I did wrong. Because you're not to go and ask people to pick your brain. You want to come from a place of reciprocity. So he said, you know, what did you do wrong? And I explained that I had just finished reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that reciprocity and creating win-win situations was very important. So I could have volunteered. I could have taken him for lunch. I could have done all these different things to get that same information, but from a place of giving and receiving. What I did learn that day is as I went and sat down after the event was over, I had circles of people around me telling me how to do it, sharing resources and pointing me in the direction. And I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing. So I never, ever thought I'd be running my own business. I never thought I would write a book, never mind the three that I have, or do TEDx's or podcasting. They were all kind of, let's check out what's on my path kind of thing. And as I asked questions, hence my third book is Let's Be Curious. As I asked questions, I was always redirected or led another way to explore and understand.
It's interesting that as a very young child, you kind of had this, you discovered this gift within you. And I think nursing is a logical extension of that, right? Because you have this to give other people. Mm-hmm. And then the hard right turn is an entrepreneur. I don't think people typically think of entrepreneurs as people that feel compelled to share this gift with the world. They are trying to make money, right?
Yeah.
And they have a special skill set that they think that they can scale and mm-hmm. you know, bring something to the world. But I think that's kind of maybe a dated view of it, because to your point, you got called up and called out on it. And then instead of a bunch of people, you know, avoiding you like the plague because you were the person that was at the front being called out, they flocked to you mm-hmm. to help you with it. And I think that might be a little bit of a misconception with people and maybe stop them from taking that step, is that they feel like it's very cutthroat because of the grind mentality that's associated with entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I've learned along this journey, I wasn't there in the beginning, you know, because I understand where you're talking about the competitive part. But when I think about the amount of people in this world, I can't serve all of them. And I've learned to really come from a place of collaboration, and through the coaching training and just life, is being able to trust the process. It's one of the hardest things, I think, personally. But one of the most rewarding is when you trust the process of your efforts and you're able to detach, knowing whatever will unfold from those efforts will be the best for you. Or there's going to be a lesson attached to it that leads you along the way. You know, I've had many lessons on pursuing it. It's always been, you know, building the coaching practice, building the podcast, everything has been off the side of my desk while I worked in management, while I worked in leadership. As a nurse through the pandemic even. And, you know, there was a time that I was ready to take the big leap. And I found out the people around me didn't believe in me at the same time. And I learned that when I was going to resign and I didn't follow through, I had self-betrayed myself. Like I went through a period of self-betrayal and lost confidence. And I had to rebuild that. When you see that the people around you didn't believe in you the way you thought that they would, it's really hard. What I did learn is I couldn't focus on them. It was my own self-betrayal because I didn't stay true to myself and what I believed. So I bought into another person's opinion.
Right.
And it crashed me out. It crashed me out. You know, if you think of a race car, it spun me out. And it took me, you know, almost 5-6 years to rebuild that confidence of knowing that, yeah, it's going to happen. And it's, you know, still in progress, but I'm very, very close to saying, yeah, I own this.
So after you've had this opportunity to go to the seminar and you've, you know, made this mistake, wasn't fatal, right? You were able to dust yourself off and fight another day.
Yeah.
What's the timeline look like where you start to understand that there's something in that life for you, and you start even just kind of, like you said, you got to the point where you wanted to resign and you didn't follow through with it.
Yeah.
I mean, even that is a big step, starting to recognize that what you want to do might preclude you from continuing on your chosen career path.
I love that you asked this question, Gord, because for me, the word spotlight, it makes me cringe inside my chest. I can feel it. Even as I talk to you, there's this little part of me that just wants to seize up tight. When I wanted to be a physician, you know, and talking about it, I had someone in my life say, well, you just want to be in the spotlight. You just want people to pay attention to you. And through that time, I really was terrified of that word. So I avoided spotlight. And when I was in it, when I was able to be on stage or be in a setting where I was public speaking, I felt light. I felt free. I felt that I could completely express myself. But as soon as someone would refer to the spotlight or talk about the spotlight, I would avoid it. Then I was at an event and, you know, this lady was doing palm reading and I was like, I don't usually get into those things very much, but for entertainment's sake, I said, here, go ahead. You know, and we're sitting there and she's like, you know, you're meant to be a mentor in the spotlight. And I looked at her and I was like, oh no, there's that word. And you know, the one thing that I want to impress upon for everyone listening is that there are things that show up, the books that you pick off the shelf, the articles that you read, they are all little messengers leading you directions. I was reading a book by Stephen Pressfield about resistance in the war of art. And I started to learn that the spotlight was my resistance. What I needed to do most, I was avoiding, what I was subconsciously denying myself of. And then I was just like, okay, there's something about this spotlight. Why is it so frightening for me? You know, and then I read The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And it was talking about sometimes that we hide from the spotlight because we're worried about taking away from others. And I'm the oldest of five. And I remember there's many times my brother that's just 2 years younger than me, that we would play the same instrument. And the instructor would say, oh, you have pitch and he has tone. If we could just put you together. So there was that sibling rivalry. And then I'd be like, you know what? I don't need this competition stuff. You know, so I'd back up and say, go ahead, take the spotlight. It's not a problem. And then I started piecing together where spotlight really triggered inside me, where it made me uncomfortable. And as I started to explore it, I started to understand where my resistance was coming from. But it's because of the books I would read, and all of a sudden there'd be one line. It'd be one line that I'd be like, oh, just got you. Or somebody would say something to me, like that mentor in the spotlight. And I would be like, okay, God, universe, whatever people believe in, there's some signals are coming to you. There's these guideposts, these light posts that are saying, hey, I'm shining a light for you to pay attention to something. This is something that you need to do.
That's interesting because I think of that all the time when I'm reading. You know, I'll put a little yellow tab on a page if there's something that I want to revisit.
Yeah.
And it's funny how more often than not, when I revisit that page, I have no trouble picking out what I wanted to remember. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it matters to you, it matters to you, whatever frame of mind, you know, you absorb that information. So I can appreciate that. And then I have a single book that I read every year in spring, like when it's spring, real spring, not like Alberta spring.
Yeah.
Where the flowers are just about poking out. I read Ryan Holiday's Ego is the Enemy.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably like on my sixth or seventh go through of it. And it's interesting to me it's a series of, you know, stories that he tells to kind of illustrate that, like this year, this one will jump out at me because this is where I'm at in my life. And next year, and it's like reading, I've read them all and I know them, but it's, they take on different meanings depending on where you are in your life. So if you're taking all this stuff from reading books, it's probably a sign that you were looking for something and you were finding it in those different books, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, there was opportunities, like after that happened to me at the hall where I was standing in front of all these people, I reached out to, you know, CAPS, the Canadian Speakers Association. I had reached out and learned different things. And then I went to another real estate seminar that this gentleman was having. And there was another gentleman talking about internet marketing and, you know, sending out newsletters and just this different stuff. And I just looked at him and I was like, wow. And I went back to the back table. I was watching all these people swarm around him. And I was just, you know, being the observer. And I was, you know, talking to him about what I was doing and how he just said, "You're so driven." He goes, "Deb, I'm going to mentor you." And I'm like, "What's a mentor?" Like, I had never heard what a mentor was. And he goes, "No, I'm not charging you. I'm mentoring you. You're going to do this, this." And he goes, "What do you want to do?" My first call. And I'm like, "I don't know. Do you write a book? Is that how it works?" He goes, "Yeah, you can." And we started with an audio series. And this was, I think, at the end of September, October, he said this to me. And he goes, "And you'll have a full package and you'll come to my conference in January and stand up in front of everybody and you'll show them that you made this product." And I was just like, "Oh, okay." So I was like finding these women I wanted to interview, and I interviewed, I think, 12, and I used 8 to 12. And then I had 5 that I used for the product, but they weren't ready on time when I got there. But I have to tell you again, it was that terrified feeling. My kids were still small. I had never flown anywhere myself. I had never had a rental car. I was just like sitting in my hotel room the night before and I'm like, "What am I doing here?" You know, and a friend was messaging me online and I said, "I'm crying. I don't know what I'm doing." He's like, "You're exactly where you need to be." I now recognize is that was growth. That was growth. I was taking all these firsts. And, you know, I think sometimes when we think it's going to be easy, then we're overconfident of how the outcome will be. And when we have that kind of reservation or that feeling of imposter syndrome, and, you know, I read a post today somewhere about imposter syndrome means that you are growing.
Yeah.
And that you're exactly where you need to be, because that's where that growth is. And as time progresses, you're no longer feeling like an imposter because you're actually doing it. Right. And it's the signs in books, maybe even listening to a podcast. I've picked up things I know from Ed Milet and other people, podcasts that I've listened to. And it's just been amazing because it's like, oh, that message was for me. I don't know about you, Gord, but whenever you listen to a podcast, it's just like, someone was speaking to me today.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I get that. I try to listen to things that give me the opportunity to have that. I still listen to brain candy type stuff, just mindless, but I do try to, you know, listen to some stuff that gives me an opportunity to, expand my mind and think about things a little bit differently, because otherwise, the time you're investing in that vocation, just, and I do it now more so because I have a podcast and I want to improve on it. And I want to listen to how other people do their business. And, and I've never found anybody who like, I was like completely like, oh, that's it. But I've went like, oh, right. Like that's how they do their intro, or that's how they do their outro, or this is how they frame the wrap up of the pod. And it's really helped me. Although, you know, like where I don't do this for a living. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like I've taken it across the finish line by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But the podcast is still kind of like a painting. Like at some point it's done, you know, the last brush stroke and then you move on to the next thing. And I'm not there yet with it. I still enjoy it. I love the opportunity to sit down with people on my lunch break and have have an engaging conversation. So I'm still there for it, but without seeing out what else is going on around that, who knows if I'd ever get there, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, the important point to point out to you is that where is there? Like when we think about where is there, where is that destination? And we sometimes think it's so far away. And it's through this kind of journey that I realize I've had so many rewards along the way. Like even starting my podcast, you know, it was 2016. I was sitting at a conference watching a gentleman on stage talking about how he was going to teach us all, if we joined his program, to start a podcast. And I sat there and I was listening and paying attention. And I was like, you know what? 30 days. I'm giving myself 30 days. I'm going to start a podcast. And 30 days to the very day, I launched the Millionaire Woman Show. And we're coming on 8 years later. And it's turned into a kind of like a social media business, which I didn't know it would evolve to. I have book publishers sending me books and guests to come on the show. I meet incredible people like Andrea and yourself. So it's been organic. Like I never know what's next, but I've read so many awesome books that are bestsellers, you know, sitting at Chapters and Amazon, like they're spacing there. And I'm like, I interviewed that guest. And that makes me just feel so excited because I learn from them by asking the questions. And not only am I learning, but I get to showcase that those thought leaders to the world. So it gets me really, really excited.
So you mentioned the podcast, but you also have an executive coaching business. I mean, we talked about it, blogger, author, at what point did you kind of, when you were sitting in this hotel, suffering from imposter syndrome, messaging with your friend about what the heck am I doing here, to today, like what goes into all of that? And are you trusting the process all the way through? Are you making very concentrated decisions about, you know, name, image, and likeness? Like what goes into that business build that you can share with us kind of looking back?
Well, one of the things I can tell you is I don't have a degree in business. I have learned everything pretty much on my own or through others who have shared or corrected me, you know, lessons along the way. One of the things that I just wanted to show up as myself and show my viewpoint, but I think what has propelled me the most is my curiosity. That's probably my greatest strength, is being curious about human behavior, being curious about how things are done, how things, how people get results. And I've been fortunate to discover that there's this mentorship along the way, and that education and gaining knowledge, whether it be through books and podcasts, those are the things that have been my building blocks per se. Like sitting in that room when I just, each direction led me to another stepping stone, creating the path. So it's kind of like when you're doing this, I think we're all trailblazing our own paths, right? There's no paving stones before me. And as I experience something, I kind of lay the paving stone down. And it's like, okay, I started the series. And then from the series, I had sold a few of the products at a showcase event, trade show event. So I started learning about going to trade shows and conferences and speaking from the stage. So one thing always led to the next. I met new people and then they kind of directed me to where they were going next. And, you know, sometimes they felt like a follower. Sometimes I felt like the leader. You know, it's like, hey, did you try this? And then it led to coaching. And then one day I was looking at executive coaching and looking at, oh, maybe I need a master's in leadership. I had this longing for more education. So I had called someone up. And this is the biggest thing that I will recommend. Ask for help. Ask for feedback regularly. You know, I think we get afraid because we get hooked into praise because we all want to be validated. We want to have people recognize us and people please sometimes. And then there's that other part of, you know, maybe we're afraid we're going to get negative feedback and criticism. But maybe it's something that they're going to give you to help improve yourself so you can shine brighter. So I've learned to get into that place of neutrality. And that was one of the hardest lessons for me is to be in that place of neutrality. I had read the Four Agreements at one point, and it was all about the second agreement is all about not taking anything personally. And when I learned that, it was a game changer for me because it's like, okay, ask, stay curious, stay in a beginner mindset. You want to be looking for growth, but don't be afraid of what's offered to you. And I think that's what I learned. Again, standing in front of those 200 people, I learned that I wasn't afraid of what was offered to me because I had already learned the lesson. It had to be win-win. So everything I moved forward with, I took the lesson. I made sure it was win-win. If someone wanted to offer me something, I offered, let's go for coffee. Or because it never could be one-sided. And my network grew, people started knowing who I was. You know, was there criticism along the way? Most definitely. And you know, sometimes I took it personally and then I had to step back and remind myself of the Four Agreements. I'm like, you know what? It's okay. And I think that's the biggest thing. There is no linear path. There's so many detours. But it's like, can I stop and pause for a moment and look at the detour and say, where is it leading me? Can I be in a place of curiosity instead of fear? Because when we're fearful, and like when I didn't resign, you know, I was fearful. I thought they must know something that I don't about myself and what I'm capable of. And then when I paused and have done this deeper work on myself of where some of these messages might have been coming from, I learned that I'm really quite unstoppable when I tune into my intuition, trusting that process, and just following the breadcrumbs and seeing where they lead.
Yeah, I'm gonna say something, and I don't mean it to sound flippant. It probably will, but
okay.
The more, like, smaller the world gets, the more internet and social media and stuff we have, the more we see of people and the human condition. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I'm jaded with that.
Yeah.
But like the idea of wanting to learn more about that,
yeah,
is the last thing on my list. Like, you must have, like you said, this curiosity, but it must be a patience to work through with people that think they want something and then they're not willing to put in the effort, or that they don't understand what's going in, or they're skipping all the good part in the middle, and right, they're so focused on it, on the perceived prize, mm-hmm, that it's got to be like, for somebody that is kind of in demand and doing the things that you're doing, mm-hmm, there has to be people that are just, no amount of money is worth your time.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I believe, if people are willing to do the work, willing to pay the fee, and I don't have to chase them, then I am good to work with them. There's nothing worse than someone who kind of on the fence, felt like they were persuaded to do the work. They don't do the work. So what I've learned is, and this is where the trusting the process comes in very strongly, is when I invite someone to a coaching session, usually I'll let them trial coaching with me. So having that gift of coaching, because a lot of people have preconceived ideas of what coaching actually is. And when I, you know, share that coaching experience and they have this increased awareness that through the power of, you know, reflecting back to them or asking them powerful questions, that suddenly they become more aware of themselves and how they're showing up, then they're like, you know what? I want more of this. I don't know how many times I've had someone say, oh my God, Deb, you're good. Or they'll say, wow, I need more. And when I, it gets me excited. Again, I don't have attachment to it because it's their journey and they have to be willing to invest in themselves in that journey. And I'd like to say it's easy, but it's not, because sometimes I want to say, okay, can I just put my hands on your shoulders and get you to look at me straight in the eye? But I know the coaching process works. And that's why I have learned to detach from the outcomes and to be able to sit in their presence, hold that space for their own discovery. I've had one coaching client, and it's one of my favorite stories because I, bless her heart, we haven't coached in years, but we had coached for a period of time. And 6 months later or so, she sends me a picture of her vacuum. And I'm like, what are you sending me? She goes, Deb, here I am vacuuming. And I know you told me something during our coaching session. You asked me something and I wasn't ready to receive it. And here I am vacuuming and I have this Deborah moment. She goes, I'm not going to call them aha moments. I have Deborah moments that it's like, oh my gosh, we talked about this, but I wasn't ready. So I can plant seeds. We can have discussions that plant seeds, but the nurturing, how it shows up, it might not be immediate after a coaching session. So that's why I'm like, you know what? The right timing. Somebody might bring it up in a conversation 3 months down the road and it'll be like, oh, I remember that. Just like in a book, if you tabbed it and you go back to it, it'll be like, I remember why this passage was so important. So it's being, and someone told me the other day, she says, you know, you walk through the world differently. And I said, yeah, maybe some people, my kids might tell me that I think it's rainbows and unicorns, but truly I have a reality, but I also choose what I focus on, right? I'm focusing on the positivity. I'm looking for the good. And the more I look for those things, they happen. And when it comes to my clients, they are people who are committed to investing in themselves. They are people who are driven to learn more, to go after those dreams and really see themselves and not cowered from the light, because I cowered from my light. And I can see when others do it because I recognize it. And when you spot something in another individual, it's often because you have it, whether it be good or bad. And I'm like, man, I can see your light. We need to fan that light. We need to make it brighter. And knowing that you're not taking away from someone, and this is often what comes up, you know, maybe there was siblings that they had that they, you know, didn't want to overpower, or other circumstances. But what I've come to learn is that when you are in that place of curiosity, or you want to learn more about yourself, and often people are scared to learn about themselves. I know some people who are stimulated all the time by their phones. Why? Because they don't want to give themselves a chance to hear themselves or have those thoughts. So if I keep myself busy in the busyness of life, thinking that I'm productive and I'm not, or I'm scrolling on my phone, it gives me a chance to be stimulated constantly. So I don't hear some of the messaging, some of the redirection, some of the detours. And actually, when you stop and slow down, and you pay attention, life doesn't feel so hard. I think it's harder when you're pushing that resistance and saying, nope, I'm in control. I got this, versus allowing things to unfold a bit.
I want to ask you about what you've been doing with the Spirit of Christmas Pancake Breakfast and Shoebox campaign. It's something that's come up in a couple of spots.
Yeah.
When I look you up online.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's an incredible initiative. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
But it's also just kind of audacious enough that you really, I'm sure, had to dig deep to pull it off and to decide that it was something you wanted to do over and over again. Can you give us the genesis of that and talk a little bit about what that is today?
Yeah. So today we're no longer doing it. We've kind of passed the torch to another organizer, which is, you know, it was right. Just shortly before the pandemic, 2019 was the last time that we did it. And then they had a different route in the system of the school. And we've passed on the torch since then. But we did it from 2007 to 2019. So we did it for 12 years. And it started because of a bucket list. My bucket list item was that I wanted to someday go to Ukraine. That's my heritage, to go to Ukraine, to the orphanages, to deliver shoeboxes. Because as a kid, we used to make these shoeboxes and take them, you know, take them to church, or they were collecting them so that an organization would send them over to the orphanages. And all I kept thinking when I was about grade five, I think it was, is I was like, I wish I could see another child open my box. I wanted them to see. I wanted to see their eyes light up for the excitement of seeing something that I had packed together. And then over time, when my kids were in school, it kept coming up for me thinking, oh, when could I do this? It was just something that kept feeling prompted. And then one day I saw that there was a school in a church bulletin that was needing help at Christmas. They didn't get the regular group that was community group that was helping them. So I picked up the phone and I phoned the vice principal and I said, hey, this is my bucket list idea. Can I gather together, you know, how many students do you have? And he said, 125. And I said, okay, if I gather together 125 shoeboxes, can we deliver them to your school? And he said, that would be fantastic. Yes, we can do that. And then before we get off the phone, he said, by the way, Deborah, my mom is the one who ships all the shoeboxes to Ukraine. Because I was telling him that was my desire. And I said, I had no idea. But here I saw these, you know, these connections. So that year I went to my workplace and I, you know, gathered together, you know, people put together boxes. We had 125 boxes. I got a Santa and we went with some volunteers and we went into that school and everybody was sitting and they weren't allowed to open the shoeboxes. The shoeboxes were a surprise. And then grade by grade, they came up and collected their shoeboxes and they all opened them at the same time. So it was kind of feeling like an Oprah's Big Give.
Right.
And, you know, the next year I thought, you know, and my husband was like, yeah, you checked off the bucket list. And I'm not quite there yet. There's something I still got to do this again. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. So I phoned up that same principal. And he said, Deb, we can do it again, but I have a special request. And he said, can you feed them? And I was just like, sure. I don't know how. I have no idea how. And I just said, yes. And that's the other thing is just learning to say yes to things that come up. And all I could envision in my head was a little girl holding a plate that said, feed me. And I couldn't say no. I saw that face and flash in front of me and I was like, no, not a chance. I can't do that. So then I got off the phone. My husband said, so what did you get us into now? And I said, oh, just hang on. I said, everything's going to be okay. So I sat down in front of the computer and I emailed every single person in our email list. And I said, hey, this is what's happening. I'm needing to feed these students. How do I go about doing this? Do you have any contacts? And what came to be is, you know, my brother-in-law had connections with the Culinary Art Institute here in Edmonton. So he connected me to an instructor. We started collecting donations of turkeys. And then we got some potatoes from the little potato company and all these different people, and all of a sudden we had all this food cooked and volunteers. Like, it just came together and I was just like, oh my goodness, how does this happen? And I didn't know how in the beginning, but I reached out and asked for people to help me and share this vision that I had. I said, you know, I've checked off this bucket list item, but now they've asked us to feed them. How do we do that? I tapped into the experience of others to help guide that path. The following year, we went to another school and it kind of, you know, evolved. And the one year I was at a triathlon. I had completed a triathlon. I met this gentleman from Jitterby Pancakes. His name's Frank. And, you know, I had come home and I was thinking about, so how am I going to feed them this year? We can't always do these turkey dinners. Maybe a pancake breakfast, like Santa's pancake breakfast would be better. And I was in my kids' room folding clothes one day, and all of a sudden, this flash of a brand went in front of me. And I know people might be like, what the heck? It's just that flash of insight, right? I saw his logo on the wall, and then it disappeared. And I told my husband, and he goes, well, I guess you should call him. And I said, yeah, I guess I should. So I picked up the phone and I said, hey, Frank, I know you don't remember me. We had some common friends. I had some of your pancakes during the triathlon. And I have this proposal to tell you about that I think your product would be fantastic for our Santa Claus breakfast. So I wasn't able to go. My husband went and met with him for a meeting and came back. And for all the years following, he became our sponsor of the pancake breakfast. And then all we did was, you know, collect monies. We collected donations for oranges, sausages. And every year we were able to collect, not only get for a breakfast, but we created a Christmas morning and have had some powerful stories of the impact on people's families, their children. It's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. And it was only because I didn't know how, and I had to ask.
Yeah, like I can't imagine hardly anything associated with a lot of the other work that you do that could be that fulfilling. Like the potential for that is endless, right?
Yeah. And just watching those kids' faces, because that's all I wanted. All I wanted to do is see a child's face light up from a box that was there. And it's such a simple, simple thing. One time we had a reporter, it was, you know, she didn't plug in her car that day, so she was running late. Coffee she picked up was cold, and she was all frustrated. And she's like, you know what? I think I got my story. I'm going to go. And my husband looked at her and he said, you don't have your story yet. You need to come to the gym when the kids get the shoe boxes. And she said, oh, and he, you know, did a little bit more convincing, and she came into the gym. And when we sang Christmas carols and, you know, did the big reveal that there was all these presents, someone handed her a box to hand to a child. And she handed that box to the child and the child next to her and said, what's that? And she goes, well, it's a gift. And the other little girl said, I've never had a gift before. And I choke up now because I think about how she spun around, started taking pictures for her article. She wrote a 2-page spread on that, how it impacted her to know that there's children who have never had a gift. And then as I started doing these shoeboxes, it took me back to understanding how this 8-year-old Deborah, who thought she could change the world by sharing gifts, is that each of those children were a gift to me. And teaching me that we need to all share our gifts, because look at the impact that somebody made a box that now she was able to receive this beautiful gift, and the person that was giving it, oh, it changed her life. She said she'd never look at Christmas ever the same again.
Yeah, she had a story, but she didn't have the story, did she?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I like to be respectful of your time, and we're coming up on an hour here. I like to end the podcast, Deborah, talking a little bit about the idea of success and where somebody thought success might, what it might be to them when they started their second act or the part of their life that they're currently on, and what it looks like to them now, and some of the drivers of the change in vision of success over that year.
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to throw this out there for you, Gordon, your listeners, is that my dad is one of my heroes. At the age of 47, he had been a farmer for many, many years, but at the age of 47, he had to quit farming and slow down, because he could have, you know, claimed bankruptcy. He had some really, different, events with the cattle and different things that kind of threw a wrench in his plans of farming, right? And I was in grade 12, and he decided that he was going to go back to school. And I remember my mom sitting on the edge of my bed asking me if the money I had saved for university, they could use for my dad to go to school. And I said, yeah, I could make more money. That's not a problem. Go ahead. So my dad went to school. I watched his personality change. I watched him show up in such a much more stronger and confident way. And it's because life forced the hand for him to do something different. He could have chose not to, but he was so focused on providing for his family and, you know, ensuring that things would be okay. Was it easy? No. But I use that as my focus. When I hit a tough spot, I was witness to watching that. And one of the things that I've recently, you know, like as that those messages come up, is one of your greatest failures is that if you quit. One of the greatest failures is if you quit. And not just quitting, but quitting on yourself, because you are your best bet. You are the person who will make things happen when you tap into trusting in yourself, believing in yourself, and knowing that each piece is paving the road before you. But to ensure that you're not so lost in the focus of where you're going, but just to be in that place of wonder what's, who are the people, get excited about who are the people you're going to get meet next, and what are the questions that are going to lead you to a new place. And again, that might be that investigator part that I thought being a physician would give me, is I'm always looking for who are the people I get to meet, who are the, because they come in for a reason. They are messengers. They are directors. They are, you know, I have experiences with these people, connections with these people, and then they connect me to other people. So it's never ending. And to be tap into asking questions, being able to say, I don't know, but I really like someone's help to help guide me and take me down this path, is probably been the greatest reward that I've had during this. And one of the biggest things that I have learned through the shoeboxes and the sharing the gifts is that we must make sure that each of us together are sharing our gifts and shining that light and standing in our own spotlights. But not only that, is those children from the shoeboxes have taught me that I don't need to know the how. I need to know what and why it was important. And there's two stories in there that someday, you know, if I have a chance to share with you, there's a story about trust and there's a story about believing. And if anyone wants to go watch my TED talk on the power of a small gift, my TEDx talk, they can just type in my name and put in TEDx, Thunder Bay, and you will be able to understand how the shoebox story was so transformative.